Manfred refilled his cup.
Perhaps you should have been there to educate them, but I don't think they were in a humor for learned discourse. Oh, God, I would gladly kill 900 Jews if they came at me under arms and properly girded for war, but to burn them all, women and children? A man of honor protects women and children. Disorder cannot be tolerated. If a man is to be relaxed to the pyre or the headsman, let it be after proper inquisition. Men must be ruled. That was Bertolt's sin. He truckled to them when he should have sent his knights to trample them under their hooves. I tell you, Dietrich, this is what befalls when the low-born impose their will. Give us lords like Pedro of Aragon or Albrecht von Habsburg.
Or Philip von Falkenstein?
Manfred snapped a forefinger at him. Do not try me, Dietrich, do not try me.
What of the Jews who escaped?
A shrug. The Duke's man named Habsburgland as sanctuary, so I suppose now they will all hie for Vienna. Or Poland, King Casimir is said to have extended a similar invitation.
Oh, hold, Manfred said around a swallow of wine. He coughed and placed the goblet unsteadily on the table. Dietrich snatched it before it could topple and spill its contents.
There's to be a war.
A war? And you forgot until now to mention this?
I am drunk, Manfred said. One drinks to forget. The Freiburg guilds have determined to break Falcon Rock. The Falcon has fouled his own nest. His ward, Wulfrian, ran off and married a Freiburger tailor. Philip captured the man, and when she came below the walls to plead for his release, her jealous guardian returned him to her headlong from the highest battlement. The tailor's guild demanded vengeance, and the others will strike from solidarity.
And how does that affect you?
You know my mind on Falkenstein. But the Duke's man promised aid to the Freibergers. They bought their liberties from Urach with the Duke's silver, and their prosperity is now Albrecht's hope of repayment. And Falkenstein robbed the Habsburgs of one such payment.
Manfred nodded to Dietrich as if to remind him.
He'll not lose another.
He called you out, then, for your night service?
As Nida Hochwald, Manfred said. But I expect Markgraf Friedrich will join, too, then. The lords of Oberhochwald and Nida Hochwald will ride out together.
He drained his cup and turned the flagon bottoms up to no avail.
Gunther!
He shouted, throwing the flagon against the door.
More wine!
Then, in a whisper to Dietrich,
he'll bring the rot cup. Now he thinks I can't taste the difference.
So, Dietrich said, another war, then.
Manfred, slouching in his high seat, flipped a hand palm up.
The French war was a fancy. This one's duty. If the rock can't be taken now, with the Freiburger guilds, the Duke, and the rest combined, then it cannot be done at all. But Baron Grosswald will not commit himself.
He tossed his head toward the door, and by extension toward the south tower where the Krenkish guests were housed.
I bespoke him on my return, and he said he'd not hazard his sergeants against Falkenstein. What use their magic weapons if I can't employ them?
The Krenken are few, Dietrich suggested. Grosswald wishes to lose no more of his band than he already has. The last of their children died yesterday. Surely he will face an inquest when he has won his way home.
Manfred slapped the table. So he trades his honor for safety?
Dietrich turned on him in sudden fury.
Honor?
Are the wars such a joy, then?
Manfred shot to his feet and stood with his hands on the table before him, leaning a little forward.
A joy? No, never a joy, priest. At the wars we must forever swallow our fears and expose ourselves to every peril. Moldy bread or biscuit, meat, cooked or uncooked. Today enough to eat and tomorrow nothing. Little or no wine, water from a pond or butt. Bad quarters, tent for shelter or the tree branches overhead. A bad bed, poor sleep with armor still on our backs, burdened with iron, the enemy an arrow shot away. Where? Who goes there? To arms! To arms!
Manfred gestured broadly with his empty crouchdrunk.
With the first drowsiness, an alarm. At dawn, a trumpet. To horse, muster, muster! As sentinels keeping watch by day and by night, as foragers or scouts fighting without cover. Guard after guard, duty after duty,
Here they come! Here! There are too many! No, not so many. News! News! This way! That! Come this side! Press them here! Go! Go! Give no ground! On!
The hare arrested his motion, suddenly aware that his voice had risen and that he had been pacing and waving his arms wildly. And Gunther stood dumbstruck in the doorway. Manfred spun back to the table and took up his cup, looked inside, and placed it back empty.
Such is our calling, he said more quietly as he fell back to his seat.
Silence lingered. Gunther replaced the wine flagon and carefully left. Then Manfred raised his head and speared Dietrich with his gaze.
But you'd know something of that, would you not?
Dietrich turned away. Enough.
You've friends among the Krinken, he heard Manfred say. Explain to them what duty means.
At dawn, those serfs who owed service as messengers donned cloaks with the Hochwald arms and bore the news to the lower valley and to the night fiefs. From Church Hill, Dietrich watched the horses dance along the snow-filled roads. The snow that had lain thick all winter around the manor, a barrier keeping at bay the turmoil beyond the woods, was melting. Already tracks had been trampled through it. The men who carried messages would carry also rumors, and odd tales about Oberhochwald's guests would begin to circulate. 2 weeks to the day, on the first Monday in Lent, horses pawed at the mud below the castle walls and snorted bright vapors in the cool March breeze. Colorful, snapping banners marked the knights who had mustered from their fiefs. Armsmen checked weapons and hitched their burdens for the trek into the valley. Wagons creaked, donkeys neighed, dogs barked. Children shouted with excitement or kissed fathers who waited afoot with solemn faces. Women, steadfast, refused to weep. The expected summons had arrived from the Markgraf, and the heir of Oberhochwald was going to the wars. Manfred's Palafridus was raven-black and speckled over with white dots as if lately bathed with soap. Its thick mane was parted on the left side of its neck, and its headgear splendidly decorated with the Hochwald colors. Hardly had Manfred mounted than it reared from joy, delighted at its master's weight in its saddle. Two of Manfred's hounds came running, behind the horse, ahead of it, behind it once more, leaping with excitement. They were trackers, and they thought that this would be a hunt. Manfred had covered his armor with a surcoat bearing his arms. His helm, slung behind his saddle for the journey, shimmered in the sunlight. His sword hilt was covered with gold. Around his neck he wore a strap with a horn shaped like a griffin's talon that measured nearly half an arm length. Its thicker end flared into a bell, and where it tapered toward the tip, the device was decorated with pure gold and held in place with deerskin thongs. It was lustrous like a precious stone, and when he blew on it, it sounded better than all the echoes in the world. His body servant was less splendidly mounted, and for saddle he used an old feed bag. Over his right shoulder he carried the hare's travel bag, packed with the sundries of camp, and over his left his lord's shield, slung in piggyback fashion. With the quiver also in his right hand, and the spear tucked under the shield, he seemed more fearsomely armed than the man he served.
It pleases, Manfred said to Dietrich, who stood beside the black horse in the trampled muck of dirt and melting snow. The Duke had called on me for 6.5 men, and I dislike choosing which to send home early. They maneuver for the privilege, you know, but never openly. Whoever receives the grace earns the enmity of his peers, and more often than not overstays his obligation rather than be thought cowardly. Now I can add the Duke's half-man to the Markgraf's half-man, and so obtain a whole one. He threw his head back and laughed, and Dietrich mumbled some response. Manfred cocked an eye at him. You think a jest unseemly? What else might a man do, marching toward possible death?
It is no light matter, Dietrich answered him.
Manfred slapped his gauntlets against the palm of his left hand. Well, I'll pray my penance afterwards, as a soldier must. Dietrich, much as I would tend my manor in peace, peace needs the consent of all, while one alone may raise a war. I swore an oath to protect the defenseless and punish peace-breakers, and that includes peace-breaking Herrenfolk.
You priests say to forgive your enemy, and that is well, for revenge follows revenge until eternity. But between a man who will stop at nothing and one who will hesitate at anything, the advantage is generally to the former. The pagans had it right, too. It is a false peace to be over-forgiving. Your enemy may read forbearance as weakness and so be drawn to strike.
And how are you to determine the question? Dietrich asked.
Manfred grinned.
Why, that I should fight my enemy, but fairly.
He twisted in his saddle to see whether his corps was yet assembled.
Ho! Jürgen! To the fore!
The Junker, astride a white Valachian, galloped past the cheering assembly with the Hochwald banner planted in his stirrup. Kunigund ran to Eugen's horse and, having grabbed the check reins, cried, "Promise me you'll come back, promise!"
Eugen begged a kerchief from the girl to wear as a favor. This he tucked in his girdle, declaring that it would keep him from harm.
Kunigund beseeched her father, "Keep him safe, father. You won't let anyone harm him."
Manfred leaned to touch Kunigund on either cheek.
"As safe as my arm and his honor permit, sweetling. But all lies in God's hands."